This session will be continuing on the theme of the four reminders or the four mind turnings. I really liked all the other versions that Paninita shared with us. I'm going to be focusing on the second of the reminders, which is impermanence. But I thought I would just read a verse on the four reminders to give us some context. This human birth is precious, an opportunity to awaken. But this body is impermanent. Ready or not, one day I shall die. So this life I must know as the tiny splash of a dew raindrop, a thing of beauty that disappears even as it comes into being. The karma I create shapes the course of my life, but however I act, life always has difficulties. No one can control it all. Only the Dharma can free me and others from suffering forever. Therefore, I recall my heart's longing for freedom and resolve every day and night, here and now, to realize it. So that's quite strong, I find, but I also find it very helpful. To have that reminder. So as Ratnadeva was focusing on this morning, this human birth, this human life is precious, and it is an opportunity to awaken. We've called this retreat Letting Go and Waking Up, and obviously it's a really big theme, metaphor of the spiritual life in Buddhism, the idea of waking up. Enlightenment being described as awakening the heart and the mind, Bodhi awakening in a way, insight awakening. And what's interesting with Buddhism, Paninita was talking last night about that connection, that there's not that split between the heart and the mind, and that citta could be translated as heart's mind or mind heart. So we're both awakening our heart and awakening our mind. And we don't have a lot of time on this earth. We've just got our lifetime to do whatever we're going to do. But every moment is an opportunity to awaken. Every experience is an opportunity to awaken. And it doesn't have to be this massive, great, big experience of awakening as the Buddha had, but it's a process, a constant process of awakening, in little ways. So every little experience, every moment, we can awaken a bit more insight, we can awaken a bit more kindness, awaken a bit more compassion, and I think it's really helpful to be aware of our own experience of impermanence in this lifetime. So it's not just that we know that one day we will die, though I think if you're anything like me, you go into denial a lot about the time. It's like intellectually I know I'm going to die, but I don't really on another level believe it, and I don't act as if I believe it some of the time. So that's why it's really helpful to have these reminders, including the reminder of impermanence, because whenever I'm reminded, it makes me think, well, actually, yes, what are my priorities? What do I value most? What am I doing with my time, with my life? And it is an encouragement, or it sort of reminds me that actually binge watching a series on Netflix may be enjoyable, but might not actually be the best use of my time. Not that I'm never going to do that again, of course I am, but we make choices all the time, don't we? And it's interesting that impermanence is at the heart, I think, of all Buddhism, of all the Dharma, all the teachings. But Sangharakshita said, if you had to sum up Buddhism in one word, it would be impermanence. And the Buddha's insight in his awakening, he saw impermanence, he saw conditionality, things changing over a long period. You know, we were told he remembered lots and lots of different lifetimes, but he also saw the world and all the conditions constantly changing, arising, passing away. So he kind of saw the impermanence of the world and phenomena, as well as impermanence of his life, other people's lives. And that sense of change, of process, of conditionality, that things weren't fixed, which again is really at the root of our Buddhist teaching. And because of that, you know, because things do change, then the choices we make, the actions we have are important. You know, yes, there's samsara, yes, there's dukkha, there are things we can't change at all, that are conditions that are not at all within our control. But what we do have control of is our actions of body, speech, and mind. And whatever we do will have consequences, will bear fruit, even if not immediately further down the line. So if we take that on board, you know, then what choices do we make? You know, what are the seeds that we're planting that we're helping to grow and cultivate? You know. And that remind the reminder. Recalling my heart's longing for freedom. That line really evokes something for me. You know, my heart, my mind, I think there is that longing for freedom. And it's freedom from all the ways that I restrict myself, all my conditioning, all my views, when I get into that sort of small mind, very ego-based, very just being more concerned about me and mine, to when I can be more expansive, more connected with others. And, so that is part for me of that awakening process. So for me, the fact that there is impermanence is very liberating. And like the very first teachings that I heard of the Dharma, opening of the Dhammapada and things like that, I think that was one of the things that I responded to very strongly. And that was because I had grown up and had very strong beliefs and views that I was fixed in a certain way, other people were fixed in a certain way, the world was fixed in a certain way. You know, I didn't really believe I could change, that people could change. I thought, you know, the world was a terrible place, and I didn't sort of see the wider picture that yes, there are terrible things that people do and that are happening, but there are also things that are, you know, very inspiring, and people do a lot of good. So I didn't have that perspective, and therefore I was, you know, very. Yeah, I would sometimes just feel completely impotent, or I wouldn't try and do something because I think, what's the point? It made me very cynical, it made me give up on a lot of things, it made me not engage with life or connect with others. And I think I also had a very strong experience of impermanence in terms of probably a lot more than most people. I had a lot of people that I cared about in my life who had died or had disappeared from my life or moved from my life right from the time when I was a child. And again, that gave me that sense of couldn't rely on people being there, and what was the point of actually connecting with people if I might lose them? Or being so scared of losing them. So scared of impermanence, really. Scared of my own impermanence, other people's impermanence, of situations' impermanence. And that was another reason not to commit to anything. And it created a lot of change when I actually got more of a Dharmic perspective, which was that, yes, impermanence is part of the world. Conditionality is one of the three lakshanas, isn't it? It's a key one. That you know, everything is impermanent, you know, and therefore not to take it so much personally in terms of how it was affecting me and how I was experiencing it, but just in a way, accepting this was part of reality, and I could either fight against it or deny it or go through all my different ways of trying to cope with it, rather than to actually just acknowledge, yes, things were impermanent, and then therefore to value them while I had them, to value people while they were in my lives. So rather than, you know, not allow myself to get close to people in case I lost them, to actually know that, yes, there was a possibility of impermanence, you know, at some point we will all die. But therefore, isn't it a great joy, a privilege to have, you know, people you care about in your life, people who care about you in your life, even if it is just for a little bit of time, you know, or people that can be really significant to you in your life. Sometimes they're not there for the whole of your life, but for a certain period of time, they're just really important. And they create conditions that can be very, very helpful. So yes, for me, there's not just that sense of impermanence being a loss and part of dukkha, because that is one of the key things in dukkha, that, you know, we don't get what we want, we get things we don't want, but also when we have what we want, there's always that anticipation of losing it because it's impermanence, that fear of losing it because it's impermanence. Yeah, and sometimes getting into so much anticipation about losing it at some point that you don't actually allow yourself to enjoy it, take it in while it's there. So, reflecting on impermanence is one of the key ways that we come across again and again in the Buddha's teachings as a way of cultivating insight and awakening. And there are lots of different meditation practices to do that, and it's also something we can just do in our everyday life. And it doesn't all have to be like meditating on the fact that we might die or that we will die. I mean, there are meditation practices very specifically around that. There's a whole school which I've never particularly wanted to do, but maybe it'd be good for me, you know, where you're actually meditating on like the idea that your body is going to decompose and all the different elements of it, and you know, it's, I suppose it's supposed to make you less attached to your body, but that hasn't particularly appealed to me. But there was another practice, this six element practice, where we take in the fact that there's different elements in our body and different elements in the earth, and that actually in a way we borrowed those elements in our body, and then when we die they'll go back to the world, back to the earth or water or all the things in the outer world, which I have found quite helpful as a letting go practice. But really, for me, a lot of the way that I reflect on impermanence, I become more aware of impermanence, is actually in a very, very simple way, just by bringing more awareness to my body and my experience, you know, moment by moment, doing mindfulness of breathing practice, doing metta bhavana, just sitting. Any time we pay attention to our experience, we'll notice that it isn't fixed, it is changing all the time. You know, some of it we may be aware of changing but not actually feel, you know, like cells dying and new cells happening. We might not necessarily feel that, but we do feel sensations in our body that change over time. You know, even if we've got a pain, even if we've got a chronic condition, if we actually pay attention to that, we will probably notice that there's sensations, a flow of sensations. It's not all fixed, you know. We might expect it to be fixed, but it isn't necessarily. And I think that's the same with a lot of our experience, not just our physical experience, but our emotional and mental experience. In our group, that came up actually, thinking about, you know, because there is impermanence, it means change is possible. And then that means that we can change. You know, there's a whole, you know, the whole idea of spiritual awakening and spiritual development is reliant on impermanence in a way. If things didn't change, if things were permanent, then we would be fixed. You know, so that whole idea of not fixed self, things not being fixed, things always being in process, which again is a key insight of the Buddha, that all makes possible change. Yeah. So somebody was saying, you know, learning that we don't have to be a certain way, because that what we've been told, or we've been told that's how we are. And certainly I had lots of messages about this, you're this kind of a person and you're like this, and I kind of believed it, you know. And actually, sometimes it was true and sometimes it wasn't true. I know that I have changed so much in my life. That makes me know that more change is possible if I choose to, you know. You change the conditions and change happens, you know, and one of the things we're doing in our practice is creating conditions, hopefully, for positive change to happen. But of course, we never quite know what's going to be positive conditions or so-called negative conditions, because things that may feel really difficult, really challenging, choices I've made, things I've done that may have felt like really unskillful or disastrous, or have often led in the long term to me changing, or me having insights, or me deciding not to do something anymore that I've been doing for years and years and years. So it's not always easy to say that that's a positive or a negative condition. But basically, things change, we change, other people change, if we're willing to allow other people to change and not try and fix them. Because there's something very comforting about being able to fix ourselves, fix others. It's part of our way of wanting to control our experience or control the world and feel less anxious, I think. I mean, it's interesting that people get so, I think, anxious around people who don't have a fixed gender, for instance. Or even if, you know, if you're bisexual, you're not just like gay or straight, you know. People like to be able to put you in a box and then know how to relate to you, rather than the fact that you might be changing and this might be happening now and something else might be happening in the future. Things may be more fluid in all different kinds of ways. And we do often identify with views, with particular sort of states we get into, if they're kind of familiar, rather than saying that they're habits or they're the results of our conditioning. So part of the awakening is that seeing through those, freeing ourselves from them, letting them go. Contacting that Buddha nature that Ratnadeva was talking about. So I'll be saying more about this in the second session this evening, but I do find it just like so encouraging, so inspiring, actually, that in Buddhism there's this idea that we all have the seeds of awakening, enlightening, and we just have to create the right conditions for that to grow and develop and flourish, you know, that we could all become the Buddha, we can all become bodhisattvas, enlightenment beings, and that we have original purity, if you want to call it, you know, that we can uncover, get back to, rather than it being something that we have to sort of go out and seek or create. Some of it is about uncovering, rediscovering what's already there, and allowing it to grow and flourish. I'm just going to read a few quotes, a couple from the Bodhicharya, Vatara. Those I loathe will die, those I love will die, I too will die, and all will die. So what does it evoke hearing those words? You know, those I loathe will die, those I love will die, I too will die, and all will die. I mean, for me, paradoxically, it kind of just actually makes me feel a sense of connection, solidarity with all life. You know, we're all in this together. none of us are going to be there forever. Why not let go of some of our grudges or all the things that separate us from each other? You know, why not just connect on that common experience of being a human being in the world for a little while, trying your best to live your life, yeah, knowing that we're all going to die and we have a limited amount of time and we all want to lead as fulfilled and as happy a life as we can, as meaningful a life as we can. Yeah. And we never know when we're going to die either. So that idea of just keeping on reminding ourselves of impermanence, including our own impermanence, can keep us focused on what matters, what we value. So another quote from the Bodhicaryavatara is, "This death pays no heed to what is done or undone. A kilo of security, not to be trusted by those sick or well, a shattering thunderbolt from nowhere." And I think, yeah, often we have this sense that we, at some point, as we get towards the end of our life, we'll do certain things, we put them off. We may have the illusion that because we're healthy now, we're going to live for a long time, you know. But death comes to everyone, and you never know when it's going to come. And I suppose what's happened this last year is we've all globally had a really strong experience of the impermanence of life and how, and the impermanence of our health, impermanence of all the ways that we live our lives, all the structures, all the things that we maybe took for granted in the in our environments, in our cultures, you know, so, and ways of living. You know, apart from the fact that so many people, you know, have caught COVID-19 during this pandemic and that so many people have died. And so many people have been ill, and some people have, you know, ended up with long COVID and other complications. You know, just the fact of the pandemic, you know, has led to all these lockdowns and of lots of things that we took for granted just not being available, you know. And lots of things that we would do, you know, like spending time with friends or family, I suppose, particularly at a time of the year like this, you know. Most people would have been planning to spend time with people they cared about, maybe with a family or maybe going on a retreat, and none of that is possible, you know. And when people have been not able to visit, you know, friends or family who are not living locally, you know, all these areas that you can't go to or these countries you can't go to, you know, lots of businesses being shut down, lots of shops being shut down, transport, travel, everything. And then no sort of security around so many things that we might have taken for granted. You know, lots of people losing jobs, lots of people facing losing accommodation and things like that. When they, up until this all happened, things might have felt like, you know, they were on a trajectory, they'd done all the things, you know, they've got a good job, maybe they've got a nice house, good relationship, and all those kinds of things. And then suddenly this thing happens, this pandemic happens, and we realise that none of that is permanent, you know, that we're not permanent. And it has been an opportunity for awakening, just because of, you know, in a way, having things like dukkha, impermanence in our faces, you know, it does make us choose or realise what is of value, you know, what are the things that are more important? Is it going into work every day, you know, trying to sort of, you know, get up the career ladder, you know, is it doing loads and loads of shopping and things like that? I mean, there may have been all kinds of things that we did that we realised, actually, I enjoyed doing it, but it's not the most important thing, you know. So that has been, in a way, another side of this experience, that opportunity for reflecting, thinking on what matters. which often we only do, you know, at times when, when we are more aware of impermanence. You know, certainly if we're around somebody that we care about that's ill or dying or dies, or when we ourselves are ill or dying, those tend to be the times when we really think about what matters, you know, and then that's the time when we regret certain things that we didn't do while we were here. Yeah. You know, there's the list of the top five regrets of the dying, which was, I think, compiled by a nurse or someone who did a lot of work with people who were dying, a palliative care nurse, a woman called Bonnie Ware. She, I think, had a website and a book around it. But I remember there was, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. And I can look at my life and think that the first half I was living the life that others expected of me. And I think it's probably, well, after my mother died and after I discovered the Dharma, that that was when I began trying to find out what it might be to live a life true to myself. And I've been on that trajectory ever since, in a way. And I think the Dharma has created a context. The Sangha has created the context for me to be doing that. And I do feel, actually, that now, if I did die, at least, you know, I've been doing what I wanted to do, I've been who I want to be. So I'm not kind of regretting that I was too scared to do certain things in case people rejected me or disapproved of me or judged me. Another one was about, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. So I know this, I can see Panyanita laughing at me because this is one that I'm still working with. You know, I think it's quite hard, isn't it, sometimes to get your perspective and the balance between work and the rest of your life. And I think particularly actually working at a Buddhist center when there's so much confusion because it's something that I'm doing because I love it and because it's part of my spiritual path and a spiritual practice, and it feels really meaningful what I'm doing, and I love a lot of what I'm doing. But then it's so easy to just sort of put that set first, the center first, thank first, and not do the things for myself and not give space. I think actually this year has been very, very, maybe a bit more extreme because there hasn't been that opportunity to get away on retreats and things like that. And then, you know, if you're just at home, you might as well be working. So I'm realizing that's not a good way of doing so. Work in progress, that one for me. Wish I'd had the courage to express my feelings. Well, for years I never did that. You know, I would just be really quiet and I wouldn't say anything and I'd be thinking all this stuff or feeling all this stuff. And stuff would build up and build up because I wasn't expressing it. And then it would get expressed indirectly and very unskillfully, usually. But also, you know, some of the feelings were really positive feelings and it's nice to be able to express them, and some of them were, you know, maybe a bit more destructive feelings, which if actually I'd been expressing what I was feeling, they wouldn't have built up to that point where they became so destructive. Yeah. And it does take courage to be open, to be honest, because you don't know how anyone's going to respond to you, if they're going to reject you or ridicule you or ignore you. You know, we're tender, we're vulnerable. And I think it's finding the right people, the right context where we can do that. Which for me has very much been Sangha, actually. You know, we have a shared sense of values, you know, if we're practicing together. And that doesn't mean to say that we don't get into difficult communications and we don't behave badly and all that kind of stuff, but it means that if we do, there's that shared set of values to try and sort it out. Ethical values, everyone trying to practice the precepts. I think another one was wishing to have stayed in touch with friends. That's another top regret of the dying, you know. And again, I think it's quite interesting during this pandemic, there were a lot of people that I'd lost touch with or only was in contact every now and again that I've been much more in contact with. And I think Yeah, when it comes down to it, our relationships, the people we care about, the people we love, that's most meaningful in our lives. Yeah, so it's really important not to lose touch with that and not to lose touch with the people that we care about, even if they may be a long way away. I think one of the things we've all learned is, with modern technology, there's the phone, there's the internet, or even if you want to go sort of old school, you can send a letter or a card. There's ways of staying in contact with people. Yeah. And actually, the last one was something about wishing. I wish I'd let myself be happier. Yeah. And I think that's really interesting as well, because I think we often focus very much on the negative, and we kind of feel, I don't know, if you're anything like me, I kind of had a view that actually reality was really difficult and challenging, and that if I was being in touch with joy and happiness, that that was me being in denial, or, and actually from a Buddhist perspective, both are elements of reality. To be focused just on the happy and the joyful, is not all of reality, and to be focused just on the suffering is not all reality. So we have both, and then we have equanimity. Panini was saying about feeling, experiencing more than one thing at a time. And I think we often go into these dualities of swinging from one extreme to the other, where actually what we want to be able to do is hold both, and in a way transcend those dualities. So in a way, I guess what I've all been talking about is just about, it links very much to what Matt Dave was talking about, the preciousness of our lives, the preciousness of human life, that knowing it's impermanent, we can value it, and then we can be motivated to make the most of it, make the most of the people in our lives as well, knowing that they're also impermanent, and make the most of the opportunities, knowing that those are impermanent. Conditions change all the time. And if the conditions aren't great, well, that's great, isn't it? That they're impermanent. Yeah. It's one way of getting through really difficult, challenging, painful time, knowing that it is impermanent. Yeah. At the time, it might not feel like that, and some things last longer than others, but one of the things we do know is that everything is impermanent. Yeah, things arise and pass away in dependence on conditions, external conditions, internal conditions. Yeah. So we can do that reflection through our experience in a way. It's the most obvious way of reflecting on impermanence is noticing the impermanence in our lives, noticing the impermanence in our moment-by-moment experience. Our feelings, our thoughts, our physical sensations. Going to do a couple more quotes, then I'm just going to stop and we'll do some meditation. It's just like, I suppose there's that invitation, that encouragement to not be scared of the idea of impermanence, to actually welcome it, and for it to be part of our perspective, our dharmic perspective, which can then free us from some of our conditioned responses, reactions around it, our habits that we've got, which are often around trying to push it away or deny it, yeah, impermanence. So this is from Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche about remembering death. Just as every single thing is always moving inexorably closer to its ultimate dissolution, so also your own life, like a burning butter lamp, will soon be consumed. It would be foolish to think that you can first finish all your work and then retire to spend the later stages of your life practicing the Dharma. Can you be certain that you will live that long? Does death not strike the young as well as the old? No matter what you are doing, therefore, remember death and keep your mind focused on the Dharma. So that whole thing of just remembering, I love that image of the burning butter lamp. And we can't be certain, can we, that we will live for any specific length of time, So if we live as if we don't know, then that might motivate us more to put more energy, more time into the things that nurture us, the things that help us grow, develop, the things that are meaningful, and into things that can be a benefit to others. And I think another side of that is that appreciation of others, that gratitude for the other people in our lives. So the, again, I've forgotten the Katanika Bhavna that Ratna Deva led us in, which was very much about sense of gratitude and including gratitude for certain people in our lives, including teachers and things like that. And it is, it's a bit of a cliche, isn't it, that often we don't express gratitude to people while they're alive or appreciation to them when they're alive, and then that all happens when they're dead, you know. We have all these really moving memorials or remembrances or wakes where people are saying how important that person was and all the things they liked about them. But a lot of those people never said that to that person when they was alive. So again, just that encouragement to rejoice in people, to express appreciation, send them a little card or just, you know, give them a hug while they're there, you know, let them feel appreciated. We all want to feel valued and appreciated and loved. So I'm just going to end this with a poem by Bernard O'Donoghue called Going Without Saying. It is a great pity we don't know when the dead are going to die, so that over a last companionable drink, we could tell them how much we like them. Happy the man who, dying, can place his hand on his heart and say, at least I didn't neglect to tell the thrush how beautifully she sings. So we're just going to have maybe like 10 minutes of just sitting. And then we're going to end the evening with a ritual, with a sevenfold puja. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to end this session with a ritual, a sevenfold puja, which is it's a ritual that's been done within the Sri Ratna community pretty much since the beginning and all around the world. People do it in their home languages. It's taken from the Bodhicharya Vatara, which I quoted from earlier. Which is all about a sort of a guide to becoming a bodhisattva, a guide to the path. Yeah, and in a way, as Buddhist people following the Buddhist path, we are all in a way potential Buddhas and bodhisattvas. We've got those seeds within us. We've got that Buddha nature, and so it's creating those conditions. So I found it interesting. I hadn't come across before that that way of referring to the four reminders as four ordinary preliminary practices that are helping create the foundations of those conditions for our spiritual awakening. And that kind of links in with the puja, which is also seen as a preliminary practice. It's sort of, there's a whole tradition of sort of like the seven stages of the puja being seen as preliminary practices for the arising of the bodhicitta, which is a very key point on one's journey towards becoming a bodhisattva. And bodhicitta could be translated as the awakening of the heart or the awakening of the mind, the heart mind. And when that happens, at that point, we're told that enlightenment is assured. We're not going to fall back. It may take us a while, it may take us aeons or kalpas or however long it is, but once that awakening has happened, then we will become Buddhas, we will become bodhisattvas. So from that point of view, doing a puja is a good practice because it helps us connect with our aspirations, our inspiration. It helps, there's parts of it where we're making commitment to our ethical practice, where we're expressing regret for our less ethical or unskillful practice. There's that sort of receptivity, being receptive to the teachings and the teachers. There's a bit where we hear the Heart Sutra, a really key teaching. And very much in line with the Bodhisattva's ideals, there's the idea that our spiritual practice, our awakening, we're not just doing it for ourselves because we want to be this great being, we're doing it for the sake of other living beings, out of compassion for the world, just like the Buddha would practice out of compassion for the world. So it's not just that we're practicing, as a way of making our lives better. We're doing it because if we behave in certain ways, if we create those conditions, we're creating them not just for ourselves, but for others in the world. Skillful actions have beneficial effects on ourselves and others in the world. So people may or may not be used to doing ritual, join in or not. I would say give it a go. Won't make you a Buddhist if you're not a Buddhist, but you might enjoy it, and it might help in that opening of your heart. Because it is something that's quite emotional sometimes, doing ritual, and it's sort of circumventing our sort of rational minds. And you may find yourself having reactions against them. Certainly, I had masses of reactions when I first came across rituals. But then that's part of the interest, is seeing, well, what are you reacting to? And a bit like you would in meditation, just sort of notice what's arising and what your responses are and what your reactions are. And then maybe there's moments when you feel your heart opening and feeling really connected and really enjoying it. And maybe you feel other times when you're feeling like, not sure about this. But that's all part of it. That's fine. So we're going to do this sevenfold puja, which is basically a set of verses that we do in what we call and response, where one person says a line and then people respond with that line. Yeah, that whole thing of us responding to values or teachings, and then in our hearts, but also that's kind of done metaphorically through that call and response. So most of it will be in call and response. But there will be one section, which is the Heart Sutra, where rather than doing it all together, which is sometimes done, we're actually just going to be sit and be receptive to the teaching, and Amita Jyoti is going to read it to us. Yeah. So during the puja, after the first set of verses, we're going to have a mantra led by Amita Jyoti and Ratnadeva. Om Mani Padme Hum, very much connecting with compassion. And at the end, we'll have a set of closing mantras that are basically evoking a whole lot of Buddhism, Bodhisattvas, and their qualities. Yeah. And we will do a section. We talk about going for refuge to the three jewels, the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, which in a way is our connecting to the things that are meaningful to us, the Buddha's teachings, the Buddha himself, you know. That example of what we could be, our potential, and thanks to him for showing the way, and then also to the spiritual community of enlightened beings. And that we will be doing in the original Pali and call and response. So, yeah. Okay, so if you want to get yourself ready, then we'll get going in a minute when I've got my puja book. Sevenfold Puja in call and response. Firstly, worship. With Mandarava, blue lotus, and jasmine.
With Mandarava, blue lotus, and jasmine.
With all flowers pleasing and fragrant.
With all flowers pleasing and fragrant.
And with garlands skillfully woven.
And with garlands skillfully woven.
I pay honor to the princes of the sages.
I pay honor to the princes of the sages.
I envelop them in clouds of incense,
I envelop them in clouds of incense.
sweet and penetrating.
Sweet and penetrating.
I make them offerings of food, hard and soft.
I make them offerings of food. Hard and soft,
And pleasing kinds of liquids to drink.
and pleasing kinds of liquids to drink.
I offer them lamps encrusted with jewels,
I offer them lamps encrusted with jewels,
festooned with golden lotus.
festooned with golden lotus.
On the paving sprinkled with perfume.
On the paving sprinkled with perfume.
I scatter handfuls of beautiful flowers.
I scatter handfuls of beautiful flowers.
Om Mani Padme Hum. Mani Padme Hum. Mani Padme Hum. ad meum. Om mani padme hum. 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 Om mani padme mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum. Om mani padme mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum. Om mani padme mani padme hum. Om mani padme hum. Om mani padme
salutation. As many atoms as there are.
As many atoms as there are.
In the 1,000,000,000 worlds.
In the 1,000,000,000 worlds.
So many times I make reverent salutation.
So many times I make reverent salutation.
To all the Buddhas of the three eras.
To all the Buddhas of the three eras.
To the Saddharma.
To the Saddharma.
And to the excellent community.
And to the excellent community.
I pay homage to all the shrines.
I pay homage to all the shrines.
And places in which the Bodhisattvas have been.
And places in which the Bodhisattvas have been.
I make profound obeisance to the teachers.
I make profound obeisance to the teachers.
And those to whom respectful salutation is due.
And those to whom respectful salutation is due.
Going for refuge. This very day.
This very day.
I go for my refuge.
I go for my refuge.
To the powerful protectors.
To the powerful protectors.
Whose purpose is to guard the universe.
Whose purpose is to guard the universe.
The mighty conquerors.
The mighty conquerors
who overcome suffering everywhere.
Who overcome suffering everywhere.
Wholeheartedly also I take my refuge.
Wholeheartedly also I take my refuge.
In the Dharma they have ascertained.
In the Dharma they have ascertained.
Which is the abode of security.
Which is the abode of security.
Against the rounds of rebirth.
Against the rounds of rebirth.
Likewise in the host of bodhisattvas.
Likewise in the host of bodhisattvas.
I take my refuge.
I take my refuge.
So the refuges and precepts in Pali. Namo tassa.
Namo tassa.
Bhagavato arahato.
Bhagavato arahato.
Sammā sambuddhassa.
Sammā sambuddhassa.
Namo tassa.
Namo tassa.
Bhagavato arahato.
Bhagavato arahato.
Dhamma sambuddhassa.
Dhamma sambuddhassa.
Namo tassa.
Namo tassa.
Bhagavato arahato.
Bhagavato arahato.
Dhamma sambuddhassa.
Dhamma sambuddhassa.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dutyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Anātipatā.
Anātipatā.
Veramini.
Paramani
Dikhapadam
Dikhapadam
Samadhyami
Samadhyami
Adinadana
Adinadana
Vairamani
Vairamani
Dikhapadam
Dikhapadam
Samadhyami
Samadhyami
Kamesu
Kamesu
Vichachara
Vichachara
Vairamani
Vairamani
Dikhapadam
Dikhapadam
Samadhyami
Samadhyami
Musavada
Musavada
Vairamani
Vairamani
Dikhapadam
Dikhapadam
Samadhyami
Samadhyami
Suramariya
Suramariya
Maja
Maja
Amadatana
Amadatana
Vairamani
Vairamani
Dikhapadam
Dikhapadam
Samadhyami
Samadhyami
Sadhu
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 With deeds of loving kindness
With deeds of loving kindness
I purify my body
I purify my body
With open-handed generosity
With open-handed generosity
I purify my body
I purify my body
With stillness
With stillness
Simplicity
Simplicity
And contentment
And contentment
I purify my body
I purify my body
With truthful communication
With truthful communication
I purify my speech
I purify my speech
With mindfulness clear and radiant
With mindfulness clear and radiant
I purify my mind
I purify my mind
Confession of Faults. The evil that I have heaped up.
The evil that I have heaped up.
Through my ignorance and foolishness.
Through my ignorance and foolishness.
Evil in the world of everyday experience.
Evil in the world of everyday experience.
As well as evil in understanding and intelligence.
As well as evil in understanding and intelligence.
All that I acknowledge to the protectors.
All that I acknowledge to the protectors.
Standing before them.
Standing before them.
With hands raised in reverence.
With hands raised in reverence.
And terrified of suffering.
And terrified of suffering.
I pay salutations again and again.
I pay salutations again and again.
May the leaders receive this kindly.
May the leaders receive this kindly.
Just as it is with its many faults.
Just as it is, with its many faults.
What is not good, O protectors?
What is not good, O protectors?
I shall not do again.
I shall not do again.
Rejoicing in merit. I rejoice with delight.
I rejoice with delight.
In the good done by all beings.
In the good done by all beings.
Through which they obtain rest.
Through which they obtain rest.
With the end of suffering.
With the end of suffering.
May those who have suffered be happy.
May those who have suffered be happy.
I rejoice in the release of beings.
I rejoice in the release of beings.
From the sufferings of the rounds of existence.
From the sufferings of the rounds of existence.
I rejoice in the nature of the Bodhisattva.
I rejoice in the nature of the Bodhisattva
and the Buddha,
and the Buddha,
who are protectors,
who are protectors.
I rejoice in the arising of the will to enlightenment.
I rejoice in the arising of the will to enlightenment
and the teaching,
and the teaching.
Those oceans that bring happiness to all beings.
Those oceans that bring happiness to all beings.
And are the abode of welfare of all beings.
And are the abode of welfare of all beings.
Entreaty and supplication. Saluting them with folded hands.
Saluting them with folded hands.
I entreat the Buddhas in all the quarters.
I entreat the Buddhas in all the quarters.
May they make shine the lamp of the Dharma.
May they make shine the lamp of the Dharma.
For those wandering in the suffering of delusion.
For those wandering in the suffering of delusion.
With hands folded in reverence.
With hands folded in reverence.
I implore the conquerors desiring to enter Nirvana.
I implore the conquerors desiring to enter Nirvana.
May they remain here for endless ages.
May they remain here for endless ages.
So that life in this world does not grow dark.
So that life in this world does not grow dark.
The Heart Sutra. The Bodhisattva of compassion, when he meditated deeply, saw the emptiness of all five skandhas and sundered the bonds that caused him suffering. Here then, form is no other than emptiness, emptiness no other than form. Form is only emptiness, emptiness only form. Feeling, thought and choice, consciousness itself are the same as this. All things are by nature void. They are not born or destroyed, nor are they stained or pure. Nor do they wax or wane. So, in emptiness, no form, no feeling, thought or choice, nor is there consciousness, no eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, no colour, sound, smell, taste, touch or what the mind takes hold of, nor even act of sensing, no ignorance or end of it, nor all that comes of ignorance, no withering, no death, no end of them, nor is there pain or cause of pain, or cease in pain, or noble path to lead from pain, not even wisdom to attain. Attainment too is emptiness. So know that the Bodhisattva, holding to nothing whatever, but dwelling in prajna wisdom, is freed of delusive hindrance, rid of the fear bred by it, and reaches clearest nirvana. All Buddhas of past and present, Buddhas of future time, using this prajna wisdom, come to full and perfect vision. Hear then the great Dharani, the radiant, peerless mantra, the prajna paramita, whose words allay all pain. Hear and believe its truth. Gate, gate, paragate, parasangate, buddhiswaha. Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate buddhiswaha. Gate gate paragate, parasamgate buddhiswaha.
Transference of merit and self-surrender. May the merit gained
in my acting thus
go to the alleviation of the suffering of all beings.
Go to the alleviation of the suffering of all beings.
My personalities throughout my existences.
My possessions.
And my merit in all three ways. I give up without regard to myself. For the benefit of all beings. Just as the earth and other elements. Are serviceable in many ways. To the infinite number of beings. Inhabiting limitless space. So may I become.
That which maintains all beings.
Situated throughout space. So long as all have not attained to peace.
So long as all have not attained to peace.
Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Om Arapajanadi. Om Arapajanadi. Om Arapajanadi.
Om Arapajanadi. Om Arapajanadi. Om Arapajanadi.
Om Vajrapani Hum. Om Vajrapani Hum. Om Vajrapani Hum.
Om Vajrapani Hum. Om Vajrapani Hum. Om Vajrapani Hum.
Om Tare Tutare Ture Svaha. Om Tare Tutare Ture Svaha. Om Tare Tutare Ture Svaha.
Om Tare Tutare Ture Swaha. Om Tare Tutare Ture Swaha. Om Tare Tutare Ture Swaha.
Om Amide Vahri. Om Amide Vahri. Om Amide Vahri.
Om Amide Vahri. Om Amide Vahri. Om Amide Vahri.
Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha. Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha. Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha.
Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha. Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha. Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha.
Om Mahom Vajra Guru Padma Siddhi Hum. Om Mahom Vajra Guru Padma Siddhi Hum. Om Mahom Vajra Guru Padma Siddhi Hum.
Om Mahom Vajra Guru Padma Siddhi Hum. Om Mahom Vajra Guru Padma Siddhi Hum. Om Mahom Vajra Guru Padma Siddhi Hum.
Gate gate para gate para sangate bodhiswaha. Gate gate para gate Ara Sangate Bodhiswaha. Gate Gate Ara Gate Ara Sangate Bodhiswaha.
Gate Gate Ara Gate Sangate Bodhiswaha. Gate gate paragate Parasangate Bodhiswaha. Gate gate paragate Parasangate Bodhiswaha.
Om Shanti. Shanti. Shanti.
Om Shanti. Shanti. Shanti.
Okay, so we're going to end this session there. Thank you very much for coming and practicing. And if you're still up for it, we've got the late night session, 10 till just after midnight. So pace yourself, plenty of snacks. And that session will be very much reflecting, you know, so please bring paper and pen or something to write with. We'll be looking back at the last year, looking forward to the next year, doing some mantra chanting and whatever, and some meditation, and creating conditions, positive conditions, as we go into the new year. So hope to see at least some of you there. But it might be worth the effort. I always feel I like to get the new year off to a good start. So what better start than being on retreat with other people and practicing together? But if it's too much, then see you tomorrow, hopefully. Okay, bye then.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.